Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and I am the host of this podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I am also a newly minted USA Today bestselling author of the novel Blank. I've created a whole community of book lovers around this podcast, a publishing company, reading retreats, a bookstore, and more. Learn more at ZibbyMedia.com or follow me on social at Zibby Owens or join the community at Zibby Readers. Lisa Sellin Davis is the author of Housewife, Why Women Still Do It All and What to Do Instead. Lisa is the author also of Tomboy, The Surprising History and Future of Girls Who Dared to Be Brilliant, as well as two novels, Belly and Lost Stars. She has written for The New York Times, The Washington Post, The Free Press, and many other publications.
Welcome, Lisa. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Housewife, Why Women Still Do It All and What to Do Instead.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited.
Oh, I love this book, but I particularly love on both Instagram and in the book, all of these retro ads that you have everywhere. It's just amazing. I did this project in college once where I had to like analyze ads of a certain type when talking about like same-sex marriage or something else. Anyway, it's so interesting how popular culture really reflects some of these things. So anyway, talk about that, but also just tell everybody what your whole book is about.
Okay,
well, that was a lot.
I'll start with the ads because actually you've just given me an idea, which is it would be great to have a coffee table book of ads directed at housewives over decades because yes. they go from, let's say, in the 30s during the Depression, where they want women to give up their jobs so the few jobs there are can go to men. So they tell housewives, you know, the patriotic thing to do is to give up your job. And then in the 40s, the right thing for housewives to do is to do men's jobs that the decade before they were told they couldn't and shouldn't do. And now that their domestic skills actually apply in the munitions factory. And then in the 50s, it's back to housewives should stay home. And here are all these amazing appliances that will make your life better and will please your man and make you raise the right kinds of kids. And then in the 60s, there are all these ads for pharmaceuticals that will treat your depression for yes. how bad you feel
oh
about
I love that one.
Staying home.
This one is my favorite, by the way. It says, you can't set her free, but you can help her feel less anxious. And it's like a woman with a mop all worried. It's like, oh my gosh. Anyway, keep going. Sorry.
Yeah, you could actually tell the whole history in these ads, which I hadn't thought of before. And it really shows you how society redefines women's work in all these different eras, depending on what they need from women. Mm. And they tell women what's normal for them. You know, obviously that changes in the 70s when more women who don't have to work go to work. Then we enter a new era. But yeah, the story can be told in ads directed at women and housewives alone.
Well, the ads today are interesting too. I mean, because now it's geared towards men. It's always showing different family types. And, you know, it's really, really changed.
Yeah.
So wait, go back to where did your personal fascination with the housewife construct come from?
It actually started right after I had a baby in 2009, and I joined a mom's group. And I am not a joiner. I guess I was technically in a clique in high school, but it was kind of like the get stoned and go to the art room clique. So it wasn't much of a clique. So I just was not a person who joined groups, but I did it. And it was actually fantastic. I've become much more of a joiner since then. This was in Brooklyn, and it was during the Great Recession, and it was a very confusing economic time, especially for me as a full-time freelance writer, with kind of like, I have a baby and not very much work, and I have no idea how to figure out how much childcare to get, or I just was very confused. And then one day, this mom who I didn't know wrote in response to, I don't even know what we were emailing about, but she wrote, I was a housewife before I was a stay-at-home mom. And I just thought, who is this and who does that? You know? And I think with a little bit of judgment, but also some kind of fascination of, I did not even know that was an option. And it had never been an option for me. My husband did not like the idea at all of me not working. And I tucked that in the back of my mind. And then when during the pandemic and Trump's reelection, he kept tweeting about suburban housewives and housewives, I'm getting your husbands back to work, which really sounds a lot like those old ads. And when I looked into it, you know, the person most likely to be a suburban housewife now was a poor immigrant woman of color. Mm. So I thought, who is he talking to? Not too many people, but he's drawing on this vision of America that's very powerful, but was very fleeting, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of got obsessed and I went down the housewife rabbit hole and out came this book.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you can almost be a housewife without a husband. It's a lifestyle, right? It's like the housewife lifestyle, domestic goddess, you know, and parts of that really have been glamorized lately, you know, on Instagram and, you know, entertaining and cleaning with like this new modern aesthetic to the cleaning supplies and, you know, all of it. It's like, it's become a different kind of choice almost.
Yes. And I think we're grappling with that because I think what happened as a result of assuming that women will work and have children is once again, we look down on women who stayed home. So I think there is a generation of women, a new generation saying, I choose this and it's a feminist choice.
Right. Yes.
And more old school feminists are saying, no, it's not. Mm-hmm. This happened after I finished the book, but there were a bunch of articles about stay-at-home girlfriends who were not married and they just stopped working. And I guess they had wealthy boyfriends. Sounds good. Sounds good to me. But the problem is always the same thing with women who dropped out of the workforce to take care of children. You just become very financially vulnerable. Mm-hmm. What I kept running into is, you know, especially if you're, I assume these girlfriends, who stay-at-home girlfriends, have some kind of contract. But even with the married women who gave up careers to stay home, if they got divorced later, we don't really do alimony anymore. And they gave up their future earnings, mm-hmm. and whatever debt existed in the marriage also would get divided between them. So they would end up really financially vulnerable. And I think that's what we have to deal with right now, which is if we want to have choice, mm-hmm. which we should, mm-hmm. that's the goal. The goal right. is to have a choice about, do you want to raise your kids full time? Do you want to work full time? Do you want to work part time? But we don't want to end up really financially vulnerable by the choices we make. And that's where we haven't progressed. We made all of this cultural change and not enough structural change. And that's why we still do it all.
I know. I love how you have a whole thing on like where this sort of super mom, you said it better, super powerful mom came from and like how we've gotten ourselves into this mess, essentially. Like, yeah. How did we arrive here? Because it does feel that some of these roles are somewhat unsustainable, right? It's quite complicated to do everything and all this lip service to juggling and da 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 da. And it's really like, well, it is sort of impossible in a way.
It is. And I start the book with this commercial. Now I'm really thinking about commercials. For Anjoli perfume.
Yes, that's right. You did. Yep.
It was Gen Xers will remember this ad. And it was a hugely successful ad for this perfume for the 24-hour woman. Mm-hmm. But it's 8 hours for work and 8 hours for kids and 8 hours for husband. So like, what about the sleeping and what about the hours for yourself? And it really, for me, I thought, oh, that's what you're supposed to be. And I think for a whole generation of women, okay, we're supposed to work and parent and be the domestic goddess. And yeah, it isn't sustainable. And a lot of that is because we didn't pass childcare laws and mm-hmm. family leave laws. I mean, this is, you know, it's a little boring policy stuff, but it ended up being really important because there was this huge cultural shift of women working full-time with nothing else changing. And I felt like when I had a kid, my first kid, and I was just kind of like, I don't understand the calculation of how childcare is so expensive. And I also want to spend time with my child. I don't want to give up my career. You know, it was completely unsustainable. And some of that would be helped by having really affordable, good childcare, like really investing in that mm-hmm. and really seeing that as patriotic, as yeah. if you give families choice and if every choice is reasonable and good, mm-hmm. you have the greatest chance of making, you know, good citizens,
yep.
like creating healthy young people. When I think about those ads and how much they shaped me, it also takes me to the Calgon ad.
Yeah.
Of, take me away. And like, pretty soon after all of this change, the ads were kind of like, we know this is horrible for you. Mm-hmm. And here's another product you can buy.
Yeah.
I do spend a lot of time in the bath, I will say. So I guess that affected me too.
I know that is like such a mom trope, right? Go relax, yeah. Take a bath. I often, when I'm like trying to convince people to read, I'm like, it's not like you have to go take a bath. You can just open a book. You don't even have to run the water and you've already escaped. So, you know, because it's so hard.
That's true. You can escape anywhere with a book.
That's right. Okay. So 30 years from now, let's just say when you're a child and I have kids around the same age, like are that not our ages, but getting there. Yeah, maybe my kid. Well, anyway, it doesn't matter. You know, in 30 years, where do you think the housewife and the mom life will be?
That's such a good question. And I have not thought about that. And I wonder if A will be continually having culture wars still about what women should be doing and what women's work is. But I think that with each generation, you know, I interviewed a few kind of millennial parents and they were much less concerned about what women should do and what men should do. Mm-hmm. They were much more amenable to dividing the task of domesticity by skill. And of course, some of that is affected by gender stereotypes or by whatever we're maybe prone to as based on sex. But, you know, I think men are feeling much less worried about being emasculated by doing childcare and housework. Hopefully what we'll have is a vision of the family where people can work out on their own how it works best for them, without a lot of cultural noise telling them that whatever they've decided is wrong. And hopefully we will have more structural support. So we will have really good childcare for those who need it and some way to protect stay-at-home parents financially so that if the marriage falls apart, they don't end up really poor and struggling. That sounds nice.
That does sound nice. Yeah, that sounds great. You know, I wonder about the effects of, you know, having non-binary parents. Like, what does that look like? You know, there's a, you know, maybe the concept of gender itself gets continually deconstructed over the next couple decades and then automation increases. And so there are maybe are fewer home things that, like if your fridge can reorder the groceries, maybe it's not, right? Then it's not, and a drone is dropping things off at your front door. Then, you know, you don't have to. Right. And a robot is doing the vacuuming, then you're all good. You can just sit and read your book.
Oh, yeah. I admit I'm very attracted to the robot vacuum, but we have so many cords everywhere and are so disorganized. I'm like, I can't ever get a robot vacuum. That is one vision. I did do a bunch of research about same-sex parents, because there's not a lot of research yet about trans parents, but it was pretty interesting in same-sex couples. And one, I don't know if this is accurate, but according to one study, lesbians have the highest divorce rate, but there's much less bickering over who does what based on how masculine or feminine each woman is. However, in gay men's relationships, there was a big difference in if there was a feminine man, more feminine man, and a more masculine man, the feminine man was expected to do more of the housework. So they had kind of gender roles based on masculinity and femininity in a way that women didn't. You could look at that. I don't know how accurate the data is about the lesbian divorce, but you know, I think more conservative people would say, yeah, we need these gender roles. And when you don't have them, when it's all confused, you know, it breaks down. That would be another way to interpret it. I'm not sure how to interpret it because there's not a ton of research, but I did feel like through this book, we had a very uneven distribution of labor in my marriage.
I read that.
It wasn't about, you know, man does this and woman does this. It was about he worked more hours than I did and made more money than I did. And I felt like I had to do more because I really needed to protect his job. And I worked at home. And I think with the women, they're sort of like, we're both women, we should both be doing everything because women do everything. If there's a similar situation of one person works more, makes more money, the other woman is like, on some level, but you're a woman, so you do everything. Mm-hmm. We ended up redistributing the labor in my marriage, but not in a very traditional way. So now my husband does all the cooking. He does most of the shopping. So I was thinking about that. What if the fridge orders the groceries? He wouldn't like that because he loves going to the co-op and doing the shopping, whereas I find our food co-op to be intolerably hippie fascist. So I hate going. And I liked cooking, but there were things that I was doing that were really hard for him in terms of, you know, the big picture parenting, the what do we need to do for the kids now so that they get to a place later. So he took over all the cooking and he cleans the whole kitchen too. And it really helped. Like, I have more time.
Yep.
It took me a long time to get used to it, but because I was like, I have a little extra time. I have no idea what to do with it. I haven't had this experience in years. And of course I worked more, but I like that. I like to work and I like to exercise. So I did more of that too.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So I really feel like it's so much more about the distribution of labor in this very unromantic way. Mm-hmm. A successful marriage, a successful family. It's probably not what most people are thinking about, but I think it's really important. So you feel supported and you feel like whatever way it makes sense to break it up to you, you know, and it's not going to be the same in every family. And lots of families don't have two parents.
Yeah. My husband does cooking, cleaning, you know, all the shop, the food shopping. He's into the food. He's so good at it. And I've been taking care of all the like logistics, which I hate because I'm also not good at logistics. Like, give me as many loads of laundry. I don't mind that at all.
And yeah.
Like, all the kids stuff I do, all the kids stuff, everything, you know, but the logistics and the like, okay, which flight and what, da, da, da. And the other day he like organized some like transportation that we needed somewhere. And he was like, oh, I took care of it. And I was like, you did? And he was, and he was like, yeah, he's like, you told me that was your love language. And so I did it. And I was like, it is my love language. Like, I don't care. Don't give me another sweater the rest of my life. Like, I don't care about jewelry. Yeah. If you have a car waiting for me at the airport or something like that, that is everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess just knowing, you know, your buttons and having someone who cares enough and can help.
I agree. And I'd never expressed it that way, but I might I might tell my husband that this is my love language too. Like when I come home and the living room is vacuumed, I feel so good. And part of this is I work at home. It is really messy. I never expected to have not only a messy, but a dirty home. This was not my vision. My kids are messy, one more than the other. it's hard to work sometimes. It's hard to clear my mind to work. And I don't even have my own workspace. We do have a little office in our apartment, but I share it with my husband because now he works at home. So that's cluttered and messy. So yeah, anytime there's just a cleaned off surface, I feel so good. But that makes me think about what I feel like is the big takeaway from this book.
Thank you for getting us back to the book.
Which is not necessarily the love language, but I do think that's important. One of the things that really surprised me was discovering that what we think of as the traditional family, the nuclear family, was really an anomaly in human history and even in American history. And that, you know, we subsidized all kinds of families, for instance, to move west along with the railroad and gave them really, really cheap land and then set up all of these community institutions, these churches, and, you know, there weren't funeral homes, but there were people would get together if somebody died. And there was just, we replicated the clan of early humans in all kinds of ways. Basically until the 1950s. And people until then, a lot of people lived with extended family. They lived in either rurally or in tighter knit communities. I mean, there was some suburban expansion in the 20s, but even then it was very connected to city centers. And when we moved out to the suburbs, which was also very, very heavily subsidized, you know, the government paid for the highways and they subsidized mortgages and they paid all of these people to leave their extended clans and cities and take up in their own private families in their own little private Levittown houses with their private yards instead of public parks and their private washing machines instead of, you know, the laundromat. And look, a lot of that is really great, but it ended up establishing that as the norm when actually it had never happened before. And all of a sudden, this very human clan is gone. And all of these people who are saying, you know, we need to get back to the traditional nuclear family are conjuring a very recent anomalistic kind of existence. So I felt like what I learned from doing this research was that you need to make your clan in whatever way you can. If you have money, you pay someone to clean your house, maybe a nanny, like so you replicate the kind of what's called alloparenting, which were, you know, the kind of it takes a village. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you don't have enough money for all those for a housekeeper and whatnot, that makes me think about the Brady Bunch and they had six kids, but they also had Alice. No, the housekeeper. If you don't, there are all kinds of ways. There are babysitting co-ops and, you know, in moms groups to a certain extent where we shared information. We shared instead of like living in an extended family and a close-knit community where there's kind of generational knowledge passed down, we don't have that. But we came together and shared, you know, here's how you wean, or here's information about sleep training, or the opposite, attachment parenting. That feeling that I had early on, like, I can't figure out how to do this by myself. There is no roadmap. I don't understand. That turns out to be a common feeling and quite a normal reaction to the way we live now. And I remember thinking, you know, I live in an apartment building. So I was like, all these other women are home making dinner by themselves. Why are we not helping each other more? Why aren't we just like slightly more? You make dinner Tuesday for my kids and I make dinner Thursday for your kids. So I think what I tell women now, women who are pregnant or who have young kids, is try to figure out what your clan is. Make your clan in any way you can. That actually made me feel better about how hard it was.
Yeah. Takes a village, 100%.
It takes a village. I mean, it's a cliche for a reason, right?
No, it's absolutely true. Lisa, thank you so much for coming on, for talking about Housewife and I mean, even the cover. And now, how are we going to get this coffee table book out in the world with more ads?
Don't you love it?
I love it so much. I love it. I just love it.
I think it would be such a cool project to just look at how essentially men advertise who women are supposed to be and what they're supposed to do over these eras and how it changes in response to cultural and, you know, historical events. I think that would be cool and fun.
Yeah, totally cool.
Look at. Let's do it.
You can do it. I'll read it.
Okay.
I'll buy it. I'll buy it and put it on my coffee table. And you should have it come out time to Mother's Day. So think, you know, 2025 yeah. Mother's Day. There you go.
Okay. Next up.
Okay.
I love it. Well, all thank right. you, Zibby. This is okay. great.
Thanks. Nice to meet you.
Okay. Bye. Nice to meet you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you love it, please leave a review and follow us on social at Zibby Owens and at Zibby Readers.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.